Hello again and welcome to this second episode on treatment options for TTP. My name is Professor Galia Spector from Rabin Medical Center in Israel, and joining me for this second episode is Dr. Anat Rabinovich from Soroka Medical Center in Israel. Welcome, Anat.
Thank you. So, Galia, can you expand on treatment of immune TTP? What are the current treatments? What new treatment approaches are being researched? And how might they impact the care of patients with immune TTP? And what changes to management might these treatments necessitate?
Okay, so as I mentioned in episode one, we always start plasma exchange immediately after obtaining a clinical diagnosis of immune TTP. We have in the hospitals that perform a plasma exchange in Israel, availability of a technician for plasma exchange 24 hours a day, so treatment won't be delayed for the next day, for example. Hot pistols that transfer patient can consider giving plasma before referring to the center that performs plasma exchange. Since Israel is a small country, we do not expect very large delay in transferring patients. Before performing plasma exchange, we freeze plasma samples for an ADAM13 assay that will be done later on. Caplacizumab, a relatively new treatment for immune TTP. This is a humanized bivalent nanobody that targets the A1 domain on the von Willebrand factor and preventing the interaction between von Willebrand factor and the platelet glycoprotein 1B95, and therefore it prevents microvascular thrombosis. Caplacizumab is available in all hospitals performing plasma exchange in Israel since the beginning of 2021, so it's 2 years now, and treatment with caplacizumab can be started before the results of ADAM13 assay. So the first dose is typically given intravenously before the first plasma exchange, and the second one subcutaneously after the first plasma exchange, and later on subcutaneously once a day. We give, as I said, caplacizumab before ADAM13 results because we should be able to obtain the results of the ADAM13 assay within 72 hours in most cases, and definitely before 7 days. So in that respect, we do follow the ISTH recommendations. We also start steroids and folic acid immediately after clinical diagnosis. Rituximab will usually be initiated after the end of the plasma exchange sessions. We need to obtain special approval for rituximab since it is not formally registered for the indication of immune TTP, and this may take a few days. In addition, rituximab does not work immediately, and personally, I prefer giving rituximab after completing the plasma exchange to avoid also withdrawing of the drug from plasma during treatment. Only in refractory patients or very severe cases do I treat rituximab in parallel with the plasma exchange. I usually start aspirin with the platelet count increase above 50,000. We continue plasma exchange until platelet count reaches the level of 150,000 platelets. After that, I gradually wean patients from steroids and usually stop caplacizumab when ADAM13 activity is above 20%. 1,000 platelets. After that, I gradually wean patients from steroids and usually stop caplacizumab when ADAM13 activity is above 20%.
Does use of caplacizumab impact plasma exchange therapy?
In my experience, very much. Using caplacizumab decreases much the number of plasma exchange treatment. The platelet rise very rapidly, and therefore it makes the treatment much easier for both the patient and the staff. Just as an example, I have a patient with chronic relapses disease who in the past uses needed at least 24 cycles of a plasma exchange each time, and in her last relapse, after obtaining casdatifan, she only needed 5. So that was a very, very big change. Once the patient is in remission at the clinic, I repeat ADAMS 13 assay approximately every 6 months, and I try to give preemptive rituximab in cases of laboratory relapse in order to prevent clinical relapse. This is especially important in patients with chronic relapsing disease. I also recommend chronic treatment with aspirin for all patients, and also control of cardiovascular risk factor. This is considering the future risk of cardiovascular disease reported in these patients. It's important, I think, for physicians that they follow TTP patients to have the availability of ADAMS 13 assay in order to optimize treatment to be able to give preemptive rituximab treatment when ADAMS 13 activity drops below 10%. In my experience, it's quite efficient.
Okay. So how do you see the future of immune TTP treatment? Are there any advances, and are you expecting any changes to management in the near future?
Well, I think that the future that we are looking for is to be able to treat patients without plasma exchange. Plasma exchange treatment is difficult for both patients and the medical staff, and also puts the patient at risk for complications of plasma infusion, such as allergic reactions, trally, and rarely also infections. The idea to treat patients without PEX came from sporadic reports of successful treatment of immune TTP patients in patients who refused receiving plasma, like patients belonging to the Jehovah Witnesses. So these patients were treated with a combination of caplacizumab and immunosuppression, and there were some successful cases that were published. Following that, a group from Austria developed a protocol that was reported last year at the ISTH conference. They used a modified TTP management strategy and tried to avoid plasma exchange. If the platelet count increased 6 hours after obtaining 10 milligrams of caplacizumab. In addition, of course, they added steroids and rituximab very early. In their pilot studies, there were 14 patients. Only in 3 patients that did not increase platelet count 6 hours after caplacizumab, they started the plasma exchange. So 11 of 14 patients were treated without needing plasma exchange, and I think this is a very good sign. This group have recently initiated a phase 3 multi-center single-arm study using this protocol, which will soon, I hope, inform us regarding the safety and efficacy of this approach. Perhaps in the future we will be able to follow that protocol or even treat patients with a combination of caplacizumab, recombinant ADAM13, and immunosuppression. So there are things to wait for. What about congenital TTP and NAT? Can you share with us your experience in treating these patients?
Okay. So the problem with congenital TTP management and research is that there's very low prevalence and high clinical heterogeneity, and those are significant challenges for research and management. The clinical course may vary significantly, even among patients sharing the same mutation in the ADAMTS13 gene. Moreover, the outcomes may differ in pregnancies in the same patient, regardless of the given treatment. Another problem is that there is no standard protocol for fresh frozen plasma, FFP, infusions, and not all patients will respond well to treatment. Usually we treat acute episodes with plasma, FFP infusions, starting dose 10 to 15 milliliters per kilogram per day. And we continue treatment until the platelet count recovers to normal. And this may require 1 to 3 days. In patients with the recurring congenital TTP phenotype, we give prophylactic plasma infusions. A typical initial plasma dose is, again, this 10 to 15 milliliters per kilo, given once every 2 weeks. And the most reliable and direct measures of disease activity are actually symptoms and platelet count. We do not follow the ADAMTS13 level. For those who do not completely recover, the dose may be increased or the interval between doses may be shortened. A single prophylactic dose of plasma may also be appropriate before surgeries, around trauma, or acute illness.
Okay, does the treatment of congenital TTP differ for pregnant women?
Yes. So regarding treatment in pregnancy, even in patients who are not on prophylaxis outside of pregnancy, we give prophylactic FFP infusions throughout pregnancy, beginning as soon as the pregnancy is documented and for 6 weeks postpartum without waiting for an acute episode to develop. So the women in our cohort who had pregnancies after diagnosis were transfused with FFP once every 2 weeks until 20 weeks of gestation and every week thereafter until delivery. And as can be read in our latest publication in JTH, about 20% of women still experience pregnancy complications. And we actually found that a higher pre-pregnancy von Willebrand factor level was associated with a worse outcome even under treatment. In our cohort, most patients who were diagnosed because of pregnancy complications did not require plasma therapy outside of pregnancy. And to date, only 3 patients in our cohort received chronic biweekly plasma therapy, mainly for recurrent neurologic events. And of course, we consider aspirin treatment in our patients, certainly during pregnancy, but also outside of it.
What are the complications that you see that are associated with frequent FFP infusions in these patients?
So, again, treatment with plasma infusions is generally effective, but therapy is frequently complicated by allergic and anaphylactic reactions. This is what we see most. Repeated vascular access and volume overload are also concerning. Plasma infusions, of course, also carry risk of bloodborne infections. And in addition, plasma infusions carried out in the hospital or in the outpatient setting are bothersome, are time-consuming, and can be very stressful for the younger patients. If allergic reactions are severe, other therapies may be used instead of plasma, including a plasma-derived factor 8 concentrate, COAT, that contains ADAMTS13. And of course, the new player in the field, recombinant ADAMTS13, which represent a potential new therapeutic option to improve the current standard of care. So recombinant ADAMTS13 has shown promise in a phase 1-2 study in congenital TTP patients. And this was the first in-human clinical trial that assessed the safety of a single dose of recombinant ADAMTS13 in congenital TTP patients. The key findings of this study included similar pharmacokinetic profile to the wild-type enzyme found in plasma of healthy donors, tolerability in the doses tested, and they actually tested 3 doses, 5, 20, or 40 units per kilo, and very important for congenital TTP patients, no signs of immunogenicity after 28 days of exposure. Recently, recombinant ADAMTS13 was successfully used in a 32-week pregnant woman with congenital TTP refractory for plasma infusions. and in a neonate born with thrombocytopenia and severe hemolysis caused by congenital TTP. However, I have to stress that there are no data on the safety and efficacy of recombinant ADAMTS13 in earlier pregnancy stages. Efficacy of recombinant ADAMTS13 for congenital TTP is now being tested in several phase 3 studies, both as prophylactic and on-demand treatment, and their outcomes are, of course, eagerly anticipated. And recombinant ADAMTS13 will allow refinements in the prophylactic regimens using congenital TTP. So a tighter prophylactic regimen with correct dosing of a pure form of ADAMTS13 may allow treatment to be continued at home and not in the outpatient setting or in the hospital, and have the possibility of preventing short and long-term outcomes, as well as the possibility of applying more standardized but personalized protocol.
Okay, that concludes, thank you, Anat, and concludes the discussion of treatment options for TTP. Thank you again, Anat, for joining me and contributed with your expertise to the discussion. And goodbye for now.